This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Hey, sports fans, it's Mason Crosby.
And Reese Crosby. If you enjoy football, and brotherly banter, be sure to check out Kicking It with the Crosbys.
Here's some stories from my NFL playing days, goofy conversations about everyday life, giving you entertaining lessons on the pitches across the pond, fun, relatable guests, and what it means to live life on purpose.
New episodes drop every Tuesday and Thursday. Be sure to subscribe to Kicking It with the Crosbys on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Sal Capaccio, brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
We got coffee with flavored creamers, and we got soup today. That's what we got today. So, are you a flavored creamer guy, Josh?
When I started drinking coffee, I took a hard left turn from caramel macchiatos to black coffee with one sugar. Like, okay. It just kind of, one day I was like, I need to make this coffee fast. I'm just going to do black coffee with, just throw some sugar in it, and I've never gone back.
I'm a black coffee with just some sugar. More sweetener guy, though, but yeah, I can do that, you know? Just black with nothing?
I've been dabbling into that a little bit, but it kind of depends on the coffee. It depends on where I get it, if I make it myself and all that, but...
Can you tell the difference? Like, do you know where you get it from? And
For sure.
That matters?
Yeah. No, it doesn't really matter, but I can tell the difference. But, like, I don't have an aversion to flavored coffee. Like, I like it. I just won't go
for it. It's not flavored coffee. I'm talking about flavored creamers.
Well, right. But
it does flavor the coffee. I put a lot of I don't like, I can't have, like, the regular creamers. You know what I mean? Like, half and half milk, those kinds of things.
Yeah.
I do. I enjoy. Excuse me. I enjoy French vanilla or hazelnut, the creamers that I use.
Okay.
Those are the ones that I use.
I like the ones around Christmas time, like the sugar cookie ones and stuff like that. Like,
oh, the mint, they have the mint chocolatey stuff. Yeah, that's really good, right?
Those are good. I'm also a big hot chocolate guy, so sometimes I'll just go hot chocolate instead of coffee. And
Normally I have I get my coffee before I come in. If I'm coming into the studio today, I'm here in our Amherst studio. Sometimes I'm at home doing the show in Studio Capaccio. And normally, I'll get a big cup and, you know, put some creamer in before I leave. Today, I'm like, you know what? I got to go into the station early, so I'll stop and get some and grab some flavored creamers as well. So I'm just pounding them in right now. And the reason I had to come here early is I actually had to bring a soup in today, too. Today is the soup herbal, S-O-U-P herbal, the soup herbal here at our Odyssey building. And there are a bunch of soups out there, crock pots. And they smell great.
Delectable right now. Like,
it smells amazing out there.
It smells awesome out there.
You didn't bring one, right?
No, I kind of forgot. I was going to, and I completely forgot.
But you can still taste.
Oh,
And you can judge.
Oh, yeah, for
sure. You can either, I mean, heck, come on. I'm just kidding. I would be like, come on out, everybody, let's go. Judge our soup. But we're having a soup herbal contest here where people who work here, whether you're on the air or behind the scenes, and account exec, whoever, management, people are bringing in soups. I have a soup, brought in a soup. My wife makes a very good, I'm going to say right now, because people are listening like, oh, that's Sal's soup when they come in. We have a potato soup that she made. That's great.
Wait, so you didn't make it?
I helped make it, but it's mostly her.
I don't know.
It's okay.
I don't know if that's
depending on
the
rules
a little bit.
That's okay. We'll be all right. We said it's the Capaccio household soup.
Okay, all right. Well, that's different.
It's the Capaccio household soup, but she makes a good one. So I helped in making it, but she had to help me along. I don't cook very well. But I'm like, I want to do the soup thing. I want to enjoy and participate in this.
Soups are pretty easy because you just throw a bunch of stuff in a pot and walk away for the most part.
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of all soups are in my experience anyway. Like, I don't know. Maybe I'm doing soup wrong, but.
Well, I can't wait to go try some of these soups a little bit later. Have my coffee now and then, I don't know, coffee and soup doesn't go together necessarily, but coffee now, a little soup later. It's going to be fun. We're going to have a good time here today. When they first broached with this idea and told me, I said, well, let's make sure we do it on a day where there's no Super Bowl parade. And then, obviously, that's not happening anyway. So, you know. By the way, the Eagles aren't having their parade till Friday. Did you see that?
Why?
Right?
That's Is there a reason? Or, like, just because?
Because what's funny to me is, hold on, let me make sure.
Well, I mean, Jalen Hurts is in Disney World right now. Did you see those pictures? He said that he's going there, and then there was a guy on a roller coaster. Like, there's a viral video of a guy turning around on one of the roller coasters because Jalen Hurts is right behind him, and he's just staring like, is that Jalen Hurts? And... yeah, it's just I saw
that he was there. They're having the parade Friday, and last week before the game, leading up, and even months ago, like my family planned a vacation. Next week's winter break; a lot of the kids are off. It's the end of the season. I'm like, we usually get away, and I said we got to do it after there's a possible. You got to plan around if the Bills happen to win and want to be here to do your job and cover everything. I said we got to do it after a parade, and I literally went back and researched all the other parades over the last, like, several years. It's always been on a Wednesday. So I'm like, oh, the parade will be on Wednesday, February 12th, if they win the Super Bowl. It's not this year. The Eagles are having it on a Friday. And I'm like, man, like, if that was me, I'm leaving Friday night. Like, I would have to go to the parade and then head out home and get my stuff and go. But they're having a parade Friday night. Or, I'm sorry, Friday during the day in Philadelphia. They are the Super Bowl 59 champions. Super Bowl 60 next year in San Francisco. I've thought about what that could look like, too. It's now, New Orleans is an hour behind. Obviously, San Francisco is 3 hours behind. So next year, if the Bills happen to make it, but any of the teams that are in it, but if you're an East Coast team, an Eastern time zone team like the Bills, you make the Super Bowl, like going out there and covering it, like Jeremy and Joe would be on the air. And it would be 3 a.m. in San Francisco time. So there's really nothing. So I put myself in that position. I'm like, I'd have to join Jeremy and Joe at some point in the morning. If I'm out covering the Super Bowl all week, then I have to jump on the air. And I'd be like, dude, I can't go on until like 6 a.m. our time. What, do you want me to get up at 3 in the morning?
Yeah, I mean, like early on in the trip, you'd probably be okay because it'd still be 6 maybe. In the morning for you. Maybe,
yeah.
But like,
it's got to be an adjustment.
I couldn't imagine doing that. That's tough.
And then show up with the Bulldog would be on when it's basically like noon. But I think they may even be out there for that, right? I know that they were supposed to go this year as well, and it didn't work out. All right, so 803-0550 is the number to call on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show today. Sal Capaccio with you on our SOUP Super Bowl day here today at Odyssey. Going to try some soups a little bit later, but I want to try this on you today, right now, if you could give me a call. I just have a simple question for you. I threw this out on social media. You can go to my Twitter feed at Sal Sports, by the way. What do you want from the Bills defense? Like, what do you want? Do you want more man to man? Do you want a complete overhaul of the defensive line? I mean, what does that include? Because you can't just get rid of people and bring people in. Like, there are salary cap implications here, right? I mean, you have to think about all this. Do you want one great interior disruptor? Do you want one great edge rusher to go out and trade for? Do you want more blitzing? You could say you want a new coordinator, a new head coach. That ain't happening. So whatever. You can want that, I guess. It's not happening. I'd like you to give me a call. 803-0550. What do you want from the Bills defense? Someone had said to me and tweeted me earlier today that you can't play zone defense against Patrick Mahomes. He'll just kill you. You know what the Eagles just did? They played zone defense the entire game against Patrick Mahomes. But the reason why it worked is they were able to get home with their front four. You know, we hear a lot. I get a lot of calls about scheme and coaching. And you guys know, I mean, I think this coaching staff is good at what they do. They were outcoached and outplayed on Sunday, no doubt, a couple weeks ago. But, you know, you got to have better players, too. Your players got to be able to win. What bothered me about when I sit back and take the, I guess, proverbial 30,000-foot view of the Super Bowl and how the game unfolded is it bothers me that, like, why couldn't the Bills even have, so I wouldn't expect them to do what the Eagles did. The Eagles were unbelievable on, like, every team in the league is like, oh my God, they were unbelievable. How we want that. But you're not getting that in most cases, in almost any case. But they weren't even like semi-close to that. And I thought they could have been that Sunday in Kansas City a couple weeks ago. Like, that's what I wanted to see. Like, I really felt going into the Chiefs game in the AFC Championship that the biggest strength the Bills had, like the biggest advantage they had, was their defensive line against the Chiefs' offensive line that had Tooney and Caliendo on the left especially. And it just didn't materialize. Now, I know that they didn't have the same front that the Texans had the week before when they disrupted. But when you want to talk about, we get calls all the time about stop playing the soft zone, stop playing the soft zone, however you want to term that. And not all zones are soft, by the way, right? I mean, there's a lot of nuance here, but stop playing this zone defense doesn't work. It doesn't work. I don't know. The Eagles just did it, and they won a Super Bowl in dominant fashion. But what they did was they played a cover four, not cover two. Cover four is four deeper guys, basically. Two corners and two safeties stay deep. And then the other three guys underneath, the linebackers, they're also playing zone, and there's just nowhere to throw because the front four just getting after it so quickly. That's why it worked. That's what the Bills and any team really can't do. It's so hard to do. So hard. It's a tough... What did Brandon Bean say a couple weeks ago when he met with us? Yeah, I'd love a guy like Chris Jones. I'd love to have a guy like that. They just don't become available every day. Well, Myles Garrett might be available. Maybe Max Crosby's available. There's going to be... Josh Sweat is going to be available, right? There are guys that can be disruptors who are available. There are a lot of implications and barriers to landing those players. You have to be realistic in some capacity here. You can't just snap your fingers and force the Browns to trade you Myles Garrett. You can't just snap your fingers and force the Raiders to trade you Max Crosby. You can't just wish it into existence that some guy just suddenly becomes a free agent that's under contract. Like, those things, you have to be realistic. And there are salary cap implications. Now, I'm on the record, and I'll say it again. I think now is the time where if you have to take that big swing that's going to cost you a little bit down the road, you do it. That's why I was never against, I was for and understood, I should say, why they did the Von Miller thing. A lot of you, oh, overpay. Dude, he was brought to win a Super Bowl within a couple of years. And if you're paying extra because, you know, down the road, 3-4 years from then, after he wins a Lombardi, who cares? That's what I feel about a guy like Myles Garrett. That's what I feel like a guy like Max Crosby. If that's what it takes, if you have to give up, I mean, look what the Rams, at what they did. Les Snead basically said, I don't care about first-round picks. The Rams did not pick in the first round for, like, what, 7 straight years or something? Incredible. They won a Lombardi. Because he said, I need to make these swings. It does not guarantee you anything. It does not guarantee you anything ever. What do you really want for the Bills defense? I'm curious. Because I do think there's a movement here afoot where we're starting to see some breadcrumbs leading to maybe a change in philosophy from the Bills. And we've talked about this. Some of the hires they've made, are they shifting a little bit more to man-to-man? Like, we'll see how all this starts to happen and comes together. 803-0550 here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Let's go to Tim in Buffalo. Hi, Tim. What do you want from the Bills defense?
Good morning, Sal. Thanks for taking my call.
You got it.
Yep. I'm kind of torn in between. And the reason I'm torn in between is the fact that when we expect the defensive line to have a game, it's what I call intermittent. You have flashes where they have great drives and they have flashes where not so great drives. I expect that from the edge rushers, but I don't expect that from the line guys. I want them to disrupt at least more than half the game, and I don't see that. That's the problem I have with some of the players we have right now. The other problem we have, which I think goes hand in hand, is I don't think Bean goes all the way when he gets rid of a first-round draft pick. You don't go for the swing. You go for trying to fill the roster. Hmm. And I think it's time where you sit there and you got to go the other way. You can't, if you're getting rid of the first-rounder, you're going for the swing. You're not going for, and I think the problem that we have right now is we've brought people back that obviously they show flashes, but the problem that I have is I just don't see us disrupting like we should from a pass rush game by game. I'm not saying it's terrible.
But yeah, Tim, I like your point about the first round thing, and you're right about the players, obviously, which is maybe a better way to say it is it might be more risk, but you go with the higher upside reward, right? Maybe
right. Instead. That's the bigger problem I have right now.
Yeah.
And for years now, people have like chastised me, but I would love to see more consistency from Ed Oliver.
Sure.
Game by game.
Yeah, for sure. I don't disagree with that, Tim. I got to run. I got more calls on the line. Thank you for that. I like your point about the first round pick. And Joe and Jeremy were talking about this morning, which is, you know, at some point you say like you go with, hey, Josh Allen was this guy. They took the biggest swing they could on Josh Allen, and people said you're nuts and you're crazy and look at all that and look how it turned out. It doesn't have to turn out that way, and it might not, and you're taking a big risk, right? But maybe that's what you maybe the philosophy of drafting changes to this guy instead of, and you want him always to fit your culture, but instead of culture fit, high floor, whatever, maybe it's, you know what? This guy's just great, and we're going to bring him in, and he's going to be great for us. And if he's not, we took the biggest swing possible. RJ in Hamburg. What's up, RJ?
Hey, guys, two quick things here. So first is we need an impact player. The last impact player we really drafted was Josh Allen. We haven't drafted that guy that says, oh, my God, we're going to put him on the field, and this guy's just going to go lights out like we expected Josh to do. I mean, the last guy we picked up other than him would be, off a trade would have been the wide receiver. So, I mean, we need to pick somebody up, and Myles Garrett or Max Crosby is that impact guy. That's that guy people are going to say, wait a second, we have to double, triple team that man. That makes Ed Oliver better. That makes Daquan Jones better. Those are things that we need to do. And the second thing is, I'm kind of tired listening to this whole season, basically, in the last 6-7 years, where we protect McDermott. He's got a guy that's a generational talent in Josh Allen. He has to win something. It's not just winning 13 games and losing in the playoffs. It has to be something where we win and do something significant for this team. I mean, why do we keep protecting him to a certain extent to say, well, he won 13, 14 games?
What do you want them to do? Do you want them to fire him? I don't know what you mean by protect him.
Well, let's put his feet to the fire.
What does that mean? What does that mean? We get calls like this all the time. I get it from social media. A lot of people do. What do you want to happen? Like, tell me what that looks like, RJ. That's not protecting him.
I think at a certain point, we have to make a change.
Okay, so you want him fired. Okay, he did just win the most valuable player with not a great roster with this coach.
I'm just saying we need to get a coach that I think we need. Maybe it's a turn. Maybe that's
okay.
What it is.
So that's what it is. You want him fired. That's what it is. You just want him fired.
Yeah.
It's all this stuff about hold him accountable, feet to the fire. People call up like you do every day. People do that every day. There's no doubt. So you just want him fired. That's what it is. I get it. Okay. But that's don't say about protecting him. Like no, people call like you do every day. That's not protecting him. You're saying it on the air, and that's okay. If you want to change, then just say it. Say what you want. Let's go to Charlie on a cell. Hi, Charlie. You're on WGR. By the way, great. Yeah, real quick, Charlie. I'm sorry. I just want to, real quick, Charlie. Great, though. I do want to revisit real quick what he just said, that last caller, about the disruptor. I have something. It reminded me. Defensive player of the year voting. I'm curious, like, how many times a Bills player recently has been in that. I'm going to look it up. But, Charlie, you go ahead first. Go ahead, buddy.
Two things. This the last caller made me change the perspective and add something to it. The first one I wanted to say was this. We should be glad, Buffalo. We just dodged the bullet. Can you imagine having gone to the Super Bowl four times and five times and losing? Okay, this time around.
Well, I would have liked to have seen if they could, but you're right. I think the Eagles would have been the better team.
The best team in our division couldn't conquer those guys. They were ready. They played great defense. Bang, they won it. They stomped their way through. And if we had been there, we would have gotten the same treatment that Kansas City got. Probably maybe a little closer, maybe a little bit of this or that, but the end result would have pretty much been the same. The second, from a fan standpoint, gee, we'd be the laughing stock of the country, even the world right now. Number two, this hue and cry about getting rid of McDermott, professional football, not only is it a business, but it is about being able to establish a culture within different cities around the country. Football players talk to one another. Those who are former players, who live in different cities, we know where to go, where to go, no matter what the money, the kind of social milieu that is in that place. is a thing that keeps us from coming here. We, after the Bruce Smith era, hey, we suffered a long drought because the reputation of the owner and the organization in terms of its fluidity in working with players of certain ilks was not there. Old guys versus young guys, and I'm talking about old ownership versus young attitudes, and at the same time, old coaches and trainers who are, again, coaching from yesterday as opposed to the 21st century.
Yeah.
Now, today,
I got to get going, Charlie. What else, buddy?
He brought a new culture to this ball, making other guys want to come here and play. Guys ought to be glad for this guy because, yeah. Again.
Well, here's my response to the person said a little while ago of, well, at some point you have Josh Allen, you have to win. And that's fine. Right. We all know that, right? Like, Sean McDermott has not gotten the Bills to a Super Bowl, and he has this incredibly talented quarterback. On that note, I know that John Harbaugh has won a Super Bowl. I get it. It was well before Lamar Jackson. I would guess you'd also advocate and say the same thing for him. He should be changed because he has Lamar. They haven't made it to a Super Bowl. Or pick your other coaches and quarterbacks, right? I mean, like, one team can win, one team can get there. So, I mean, but if you want him fired, just say that. If that's what you want, then just call up and say it. Alan on a cell. Hi, Alan. You're on WGR.
Hey, Sal. How you doing?
Good.
First of all, I don't know if I agree with your last caller. We have one of the best offensive lines in football and a better running game, yep, than the Chiefs. And I think that would have been a really tight game because they couldn't have got to Allen.
Well, the thing about it, Alan, you're right. Sports and football is about matchups, right? Matchups. And I do think that our offensive line here in Buffalo would have been better against that defensive line in Philadelphia. I don't know if the result would have been different as far as the win-loss, because Philly's a really strong team, but I agree that they wouldn't have had six sacks on Josh Allen.
Exactly. My one other point, I'm still singing because I think the Bills are a better team than the Chiefs. You give us that fourth down back, that should have been a first, and if Benford plays the rest of that game, we seem to have the breaks. But we seem not to get the breaks. But my point is this. You could say all you want about Myles Garrett. He's got $45 million cap hit.
No, he does not. Only for the Browns he does. He does not for the team acquiring him.
Yeah. That's what I meant. You had a guy on from the Raiders. I don't know if it was you last week or somebody else. And they're not really, I think it could have been the other guys, but they're not really interested in trading for Crosby, getting rid of Crosby. So you really have to offer something far and beyond. And yes, may it take that? Because I think if we had a Garrett or Crosby, we'd have won the game. It doesn't matter if you play zone, man-to-man, whatever you want to play, you got to get to the quarterback. And if you don't, he'll be all day, just like Josh Allen had all day against the Broncos. Even though they had a great pass rush, they couldn't get to him.
Yeah.
Anyway, I just think, I'm still thinking, I think the Bills are the better team, and they just can't get the breaks. No matter who you have, Leslie Frazier, McDermott as our coordinator, it seems like our defense continuously lets us down in that game. And I don't know why. And they had a time with a minute 50 to go, or minute 30 to go, make a stop, third and nine, give Allen the ball back with 50 seconds, and they let a third-string running back catch a pass to go out and for 9 yards. I just don't get it. So anyway, I'll hang up. I love your show.
Thank you, Alan. Appreciate that. I got to go to a couple more callers. Then we're going to get to the bottom of the hour, and Carlo Colaiacovo is going to join me. The Four Nations Faceoff starts tomorrow. Jamie in Oakfield. What's up, Jamie?
How you doing, Sal?
I'm good. Thank you.
My point is, you look at the teams that are, like, really good. You look at the Rams. You look at the Lions. You look at the Ravens. They all have dominant defensive lines. When Detroit, when they were healthy, their defensive line was unstoppable. To me, I don't understand why Carter wasn't playing, and I don't understand why Solomon wasn't playing during the season at all.
I could try to answer those for you if you want.
All right. I think Carter might have been hurt, but...
Well, he had the wrist injury, and when he came back, I just don't think that... We talked about this in the broadcast, and the way Eric, and of course Eric played on the line, for a player like that to use his hands is so critical, and I don't think he was ever quite the same.
Okay, yeah. But I think Daquan needs to be gone, and I think Epinesa needs to be gone. They're not consistent. Mm. I don't think that I think Daquan is definitely taking a step back from last year. And, at 32, 33, it's time for him to go on and put someone in there. I like Carter. I think Russo actually took the biggest step because his defense on the run was so much better this year than it was last year. And if you get someone like Garrett or somebody, an outside rusher, that's going to let Oliver go. And Oliver was double-teamed all year. I know people say he was inconsistent, but he was double-teamed every play this year. And, he made plays that just wasn't on every down.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Jamie. I appreciate that. Good thoughts. All right, we'll take a timeout here coming up. When we come back, our buddy Carlo Colaiacovo, former NHL player, former Buffalo Sabre. He is now in the media up in Toronto. We've had him on before. And the reason why is tomorrow begins the Four Nations face-off. You got Canada, the U.S., Sweden, Finland. They're going at it in a hockey tournament for about a week. That's why the NHL is shut down. Can't wait to watch it. It's going to be very cool. We had a really good first 25 minutes of the show today, though. I didn't expect all those responses, but I'm very thankful for them. So keep them coming as we go on, because at 11 a.m., also going to talk with Matt Perino, our buddy from Syracuse.com. So we got a lot more Bills to talk about. We'll get to Carlo Colaiacovo coming up after this, talk about the Four Nations face-off, and more of your phone calls here today on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Hope you're enjoying your Tuesday morning.
How would you defend this power play?
I would probably put three goalies in the net and just let them try to do the job. Five of the best players to ever play the game are on that power play. You know, even as a fan of the game, it's fun to be able to be out there and watch them do the thing. It's special.
That's Brad Marchand. He plays for Team Canada. Who's he talking about there, the power play for?
He's talking about Canada's top power play unit. Dude.
Who's on that?
It's McKinnon, McCarr, Reinhart, McDavid.
It's going to be so fun. It's going to be so fun. Always fun to talk to our guy, Carlo Colaiacovo, former NHLer, 14 years in the league, including with the Sabres. Now he covers the Leafs, talks about them up on First Up 1050 in Canada. What's going on, buddy? Good morning to you.
What's up, Sal? What's up, guys? I think the only thing missing on that power play is having Colaiacovo.
Yeah, no, definitely. You would be the mixing ingredient to make it tick. I'm very sure about that, Carlo. How cool is this, though?
Creating the goalie.
Yeah, for sure. Carlo, by the way, on the Western Hotline. Hey, when this was announced, what did you think about it? What did you think about this format and what they were going to do? Just going back, not where you are now, but when it was first presented.
Yeah. Well, I'm not too sure I was that excited about the format because, you know, the hockey does display a lot of, countries and does have a lot of top players in the league playing from those countries that aren't there. I mean, the leading candidate for the Hart Trophy right now is Leon Draisaitl, and there's no Germany in there. And, you know, Tim Stutzla is another guy that could represent that country, David Pastrnak in Czechia. So I wasn't too crazy about the format, but I was definitely excited about the idea of seeing the best players in the world compete against each other, because it's been a long time since we've been able to watch this. And I think hockey fans have been robbed from it. And you look at, we just talked about the Canada power play. I mean, that's what has to excite people, because in all-star games, when these guys are on the same ice, it's kind of, lackluster. These guys aren't really trying. They're going through the motions. They're trying to have fun with it. But what you really love to see is these best-on-best players actually compete against each other. And four countries or 10 countries, at least we get a chance to see it.
For people wondering, I know there's a ban on Russia playing internationally, International Hockey Federation, so that's why part of the reason why they're not playing. Also, Germany just doesn't have enough people in the NHL to be able to play.
I know.
Right? I mean, so that's why it's these four that kind of have been, put in this bucket here to play. It should be really fun. So let's just kind of poke through these rosters a little bit. Let's start with Team Canada up there. What is everybody saying about what this roster looks like? And obviously, all the firepower they have. Where are they great and where are they deficient maybe?
Well, they're star-studded. When you can start putting together a team just building through the middle of the ice, and you've got the likes of McDavid, Crosby, McKinnon, and Braden Point, all top 10 players in the league. And then you got Makar leading the back end. That's Canada's strength right now, is having to work off of those players and building through the middle. Obviously, everyone's pointing out the goaltending for Canada, and rightfully so. I mean, there's a lot of question marks. There's a lot of concerns when it comes to the goaltending, because none of them really have this type of stage experience. I mean, Aiden Hill and Jordan Binnington did win a Stanley Cup. Samuel Montembeau did help Canada win a world championship. And I think that's why those guys were chosen over the other guys. But compare them to the rest of the countries that are participating, that's where Canada's thin. But, we talked about that power play. I mean, there's the good and the bad with that power play. The good is that you're throwing incredible players on the ice, and you hope that's a difference maker for them. But I wouldn't even say the bad, but maybe the trouble is that, these players have built their name and their image playing certain roles on the power plays and certain position on the power plays. And the trick to playing in tournaments like this is being able to have guys accept different roles that they may not be comfortable in, but are being asked to have success in. So, you know, Crosby, MacKinnon, McDavid, these guys all want the puck on the power play. There's only one puck to share, and it'll be interesting to see how they at least share that type of responsibility.
What do you think about what the United States has put together?
You know, almost the same as Canada. I mean, you look at, you know, who they have in the middle of the ice with Eichel, Hughes, and Matthews, pretty special. I think, you know, their forward group is really deep. I think it really, really sucks that we're not going to be able to watch Quinn Hughes play this tournament, because he's elevated his game to such a level where some people are even, you know, labeling him as the best defenseman on the league, over Cale Makar. But if he's not the best, he's right up there. And the fact that he's not in this tournament with his brother Jack, who is, you know, has a label for himself, I think that hurts, you know, when you lose a significant player like that. You know, the way American hockey has grown over the last couple of years with the job that they've done developing through the UNDTP under 18 program, through the World Juniors, and now and through, you know, professional international level, I think it's exciting. And I think that's what a lot of people are looking forward to, is Canada and U.S., you know, full throttle, best on best, seeing the top players play against the top players. And I think obviously the strength when you look at the American goalie is they have three really elite ones, right? I mean, you talk about Hellebuck, who in doing what he's doing in net, he's putting himself in the conversation as a Hart Trophy guy, but that's one of their strengths that stands out over the rest of the teams. But hey, it can be as strong as it looks. You can only play one guy, so their one guy better be good. And they need Hellebuck to be that guy. But it's exciting. For me, it's exciting. It's kind of hasn't really gotten the buzz that maybe a lot of the hockey world has, you know, looked for up until this point. But now that it's here, I can definitely see and feel people buzzing about it. And we'll find out tomorrow night how excited people really are about it. But most importantly, how excited the players are about it. They're the ones that got to drive the bus on this.
Yeah, I want to ask you about that in a second, about like how this is going to be, what kind of competition we're looking at. But first, I want to ask you about Tage Thompson and being omitted from the United States team. A lot of fans upset here in Buffalo. Are they rightfully upset? You know, what did you think about Tage not being included?
Well, look, obviously he's a special player, and I think the timing of the announcement really hurt some players' chances on every team, mostly the U.S. and Canada, because I think it took Tage a little bit to find his stride. And maybe if they did wait a little longer, maybe he is on this team. The same can be said about Cole Caulfield, who's having a pretty fine season in Montreal. But, you know, the difficulty of putting together a roster like this for any country, and especially the ones that, you know, have a lot of options like Canada and the U.S., is that you're always going to have one or two guys that deserve to be there and that are not there. I mean, the same could be said about Mark Scheifele and maybe Zach Hyman in Canada. Why weren't those guys selected? If the team was selected a month ago, I would almost guarantee that those guys would be selected. But for Tage Thompson, look, the struggles that, you know, he had were a direct reflection on the struggles that the Buffalo Sabres had this season. And that's unfortunate because, you know, it probably hurt his chances to make this team. I think he's definitely a worthy candidate to make this team. And I think for him, you know, take this situation, you know, grow from it and be more determined that, you know, you want to finish strong. You want to, you know, have a good push here at the end of the season so that leading into next season, you're, you know, for at least Tage, he's a player that, you know, takes this and uses that motivation to make sure he's on that Olympic team next year.
The Sabres do have Rasmus Dahlin on Team Sweden, and of course, Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen and Henri Jokiharju for Team Finland. Anything stand out to you about either of these squads, Sweden or Finland?
Well, I mean, look, I think for Sweden, their blue line is stacked with, you know, elite name players. Finland, I think they're a little bit top heavy and they're very, very thin on their back end. But look, in a short tournament like this, this is where the unpredictable happens, right? Where you know, you get a team that's maybe a little hungrier than another, a team like Finland that always in these tournaments shows up great, shows great fight. You know, maybe they get great goaltending and they find a way to get an extra bounce or two. But, you know, for those two teams, you know, the struggles that Sweden always has as a program at these tournaments where they look really great in the round robin, but they can't seem to get over the hump in the knockout stages. Finland always seems to be that a team that surprises people. So I think if they could offer that type of competitiveness, I think it would just allow this tournament to you know, grab a little bit more shine than what it's getting right now.
Carlo Koliakovo on the Wester Hotline. How intense will this be? Like, what are we looking at? I'm super interested. I mean, this is the middle of a season for these teams. Some of these guys, they still want to, you know, they want to go and make a Stanley Cup run here. So, you know, you don't want to necessarily, you don't want going out there and trying to get injured, obviously. At the same time, you're playing for pride for the country. It means a lot in the hockey world. How intense is this going to be?
Yeah, Sal, that's the million-dollar question, right?
Yeah.
Because, you know, I think fans are getting excited about it, but the people want to know how excited the players are, especially when, you know, all these teams finished their last games on Saturday or Sunday of this weekend, and most of them probably had a private jet wherever they were, taking off to some sunny pastures and enjoying the sun, the pool, and the beach, wherever they are. And here they are still stuck in, you know, snowy Montreal and cold Montreal and having to still play hockey. But look, I think there's real pride in any athlete and especially any player that when you put a jersey on that, you know, that represents the country you live in and the country you take pride in, that alone increases the energy and the motivation. And, you know, I think for any player that has been through those, you know, stages, you know, at some point in their career, they understand what comes with it and, you know, the adrenaline that they're going to have when the games start. Because, you know, again, when you play in tournaments like this, you're not really playing for the name on the back. You're playing for the logo on the front. And I think that's what should drive the players in this. Now, people say, well, it's a Four Nations Cup. What are they really competing for? I think winning at the end of the day is what these players really care about. And if that's something they truly care about, then we all hope that it is going to be filled with a lot of intensity.
What about the Toronto Maple Leafs on the ice as a team themselves? What's been the talk in Toronto? Is it just kind of, hey, same thing as the last few years? You're going to make the playoffs. Yeah. You have to do damage there.
Yeah, I think you nailed it, Sal. I think that the talk is that, oh, wow, another great season, but you know, let's see what this team can do in April when playoffs start, right? And look, it sucks when you're, you know, a fan, part of a fan base that has seen the same, has read the same story year after year where, look, credit to the Maple Leafs, they've built a really competitive regular season team for the last couple of years, giving the fans a lot to be excited about, and they bow out in almost the exact same way every year. So, I think there's a little bit of cautious optimism right now with this group because, you know, new voice, new captain, new direction with this group, that there wants to be reason for a lot more optimism and different optimism. But, you know, they also say, okay, well, we've been here, we've done that, and let's just see, you know, what moves they're going to make because it's always exciting at this time of year in Toronto. Every big player is always, you know, somehow linked to the Maple Leafs, and fans get excited about that. But, look, I think in my perspective, this is the first time in a long time they've been very close to a division lead, only being 3 points behind Florida. They've been close, if not leading the league in man games lost. So for them to be in this position after having to enduring all that adversity is a positive. I think you look at their goaltending tandem. I think it's one of the best tandems in the league, and that's a lot to get excited about. Their defense feels different. They're winning games, playing a different style, which is somewhat exciting. But, Sal, you and I both know this team is going to be judged based on how they do in the playoffs. So there's a little bit of that cautious optimism here.
What do you make of what Alex Ovechkin is still doing and being so close to the record?
It's absolutely amazing. You know, especially with the year that he had last year, where the first half, I would even say the first three quarters of the season looked like he was
taking a step back and you kind of wondered, okay, is this going to take 2 years? Is it going to take 3 years for him to get to that? Will he get to that if his body continues to decline like this? But he shot out of a cannon for the last 20 games last year, got to 30 goals, and really, you know, salvaged the season that had, was on the verge to be really, really bad in you know, in his books. And a team like Washington that snuck into the playoffs that nobody really thought should have been there, I think has been one of the surprise teams this year for how good they looked and how dominant they've looked throughout the majority of the season, and especially with all the moves they made in the offseason. You know, sometimes it could take a little bit to allow the team to gel with new faces and new places, but they're extremely well coached. They're getting great goaltending, and I think because of that, it's rejuvenated Alex Ovechkin to raise his game to another level. And I love it. Like, I'm sort of how, like, I watch the Super Bowl. You know, I'm a Bills fan, and I hate the Chiefs, but you know, there was a small part of me cheering for the Chiefs because I wanted to witness history. I think in life, when you have a chance to witness historical moments, you want to see it, right? Because you just never know when it's going to happen again. For Ovechkin, you know, even when he missed the time, you kind of wondered if that was going to set him back a little bit. And he came back stronger. And he just continued to score at the pace that he was scoring. So I think it's awesome. And you really hope this break doesn't slow him down, because I would love to see it happen this year if we could see it happen.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about the Super Bowl. How'd you take all of that in? I'm glad you said that. I think you're like a lot of people here that, you know, were rooting against the Chiefs more than for the Eagles. But, you know, yeah, to watch them just dismantle them so quickly and efficiently was incredible.
Yeah, it really was. And, you know, it's, again, a huge credit goes to the Eagles for a team that really used bulletin board material before this game, because everyone was saying, oh, it doesn't matter how good they are, it's the Chiefs, they're going to find a way like they always do. It's the three-peat. The NFL wants to see the three-peat. And they basically didn't give them any, you know, any chance. I think that was so impressive, the level of dominance that they played with, not being satisfied with the next score. They just wanted to go get the next one. And they really took it to the Chiefs. And it's surprising to see them go up beyond this run that they were on and to lose this bad in the biggest game of the year. And maybe that's a sign of things to come for the Kansas City Chiefs. At least I hope it is, because I think I speak on behalf of a lot of people that watch football. I think there's serious fatigue when it comes to watching the Chiefs, that I think people of watching them in all these games, and it's time for fresh blood. And hopefully that's the Bills. But there's a part of me that was irked a little bit watching that game, because
yeah,
you know, how bad KC looked, I wonder how much better the Bills could have looked in that game and how much more of a fight they maybe could have put up with the Eagles. But it is what it is. I watched it, you know, for the first time in a long time with no real stress, because I didn't really care who won. I just wanted to watch a good game, and I didn't even watch that. It was kind of a boring game because it was so one-sided. But ultimately, I feel like the Chiefs, I want to say they got what they deserve, but I'm happy that they got beat the way that they did.
First up, 10:50 up in Canada, Carlo Colaiacovo, 14-year NHLer. Always love our chats. Love catching up. Hopefully we can get together again to maybe Zach Hyman's golf tournament again this summer.
It
was great playing with you.
That'd
be awesome. And, you know, it was a great cause and a great time, man.
You got it, buddy. I hope so. And then, if there's anything up in Buffalo you guys got coming on,
I love it.
You need me to be a part of, feel free to shoot me a message, and happy to join you anytime.
So, no doubt about that. We'll definitely do that. Stay in touch, brother. Good talking to you today.
You got it.
All Thanks. Right. Yep, take you care. Got it. Carlo Colaiacovo right there. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back. We'll wrap up the hour. Matt Parrino at the top of the hour on the Bills, the offseason, the Super Bowl, and a lot more on WGR. All right, we'll take a timeout here. Matt Parrino going to join us at the top of the hour from Syracuse.com, the Shout podcast with Ryan Talbot. We'll get into the offseason for the Bills, where his kind of storylines lie, what they need to work on, and what they might be looking at here. I asked you today, at Sal Sports on X, you can tweet me and give a call at 803-0550. What exactly do you want from the Bills' defense? Do you want more man-to-man? You want more blitzing? You want a different scheme? You want an interior disruptor? You want an edge rusher? Just give me something you want that's different. Something that you know, this is what you got to have. We could do it here today on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show, and we will. Matt Parrino joining me after this timeout.
You're listening to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show with Sal Capaccio. Brought to you by Northtown Automotive. Whatever you're looking for, you'll find it at Northtown. Shop online at northtownauto.com.
A lot going on today on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Sal Capaccio with you. Thanks to our guy Carlo Koliakovo up in Canada joining us to talk about the Four Nations face-off. I'm excited for this. So it begins at the Bell Center in in Montreal tomorrow with Canada taking on Sweden at 8 p.m. Thursday is the United States' first game. They take on Finland at 8 p.m. Then on Saturday, we get the goods, right? On Saturday, we get the goods. Finland, Sweden at 1, U.S., Canada at 8. And then it shifts to TD Garden next Monday, Canada, Finland at 1, Sweden, United States at 8. And then I guess they just take the records and play a championship game. That will be Thursday, February 20th at 8 p.m. as well. Pretty cool. Looking forward to it. In the meantime, got a lot of Bills stuff going on right now, obviously. I threw out a question at Sal Sports on Twitter/X. What exactly do you want from the Bills defense? Is it a scheme change, more man-to-man, more blitzing? Is it you got to have one interior disruptor? Got to have one edge guy, an overhaul of the complete D-line, whatever you want. Like, what exactly is it do you want from the Bills defense? I think that is going to be how we're shaping a lot of this offseason talk about what the Bills need to do to get back to where they were, and then maybe even one game beyond, obviously, as we watch the Eagles beat the Chiefs in Super Bowl 59. Joining me on the Wester Hotline to talk about it right now is our buddy Matt Perino from Syracuse.com and the Shout Podcast with Ryan Talbot. What's up, buddy? Good morning to you.
Good morning. How are you, bud?
I'm doing well. I mean, I've been better. The kid was sick last week for a few days, and then I got it for a few days and literally was down and out until about Super Bowl time, really, like Sunday, starting to feel better. But still, it just lingers, you know? I hate that stuff.
Yeah, we've had like a little bit of a stomach bug going around our house, which is great timing because we're about to go to Disney on Friday.
Oh, I love it.
We're hoping that it passes all the way through.
I love it. We're taking off Friday, too. We'll be on a cruise. We won't be too far from here. We're going to Fort Lauderdale Friday, then getting on a boat for the following week. And then it's the Combine after that. And, you know, we it just never stops, right, Matt? You got Indianapolis, the Combine, free agency shortly after that. And, of course, a lot of the talk is going to be about what the Bills need to do to get back to where they were and then some. Where are you right now with kind of the overall big takeaway after watching the Super Bowl, seeing the Bills lose to the Chiefs, and where they need to focus their resources and assets this offseason?
Yeah, I think where I start is just probably where Bills fans feel a level of frustration at the lack of consistent answers in the draft over the last couple of years. Like when you watch the Eagles defensive line, you know, across the way from their one edge rusher to the two D tackles, to the edge rusher on the other side, those are all draft picks over the last five seasons. I mean, Josh Sweat, Milton Williams, Jalen Carter, Jordan Davis. I mean, the list goes on and on with how good Howie Roseman has been in the draft in this era of Eagles football. And that's the thing, too. It's like it doesn't have to be every single year has to be a hit. But when it comes to the, like, important position groups and defensive line, and we know Sean and Brandon value what they get from their defensive line over almost any other position group outside of quarterback, like they've tried to go out and bring in pieces. They've drafted a couple of guys that they thought that can, you know, fit their scheme. But even this, like, last year, like, as Javon Solomon is the only defensive lineman or edge rusher, I should say, and then they don't address defensive tackle into the third round and Dwayne Carter, I'd have liked them to have gone a little bit more in an aggressive way to maybe give them another option next to Ed Oliver on the interior. The guy I was really high on, and of course, hindsight's 20/20. Tavondre Sweat felt like a very unique, rare talent, and he fell in the draft because there were some character concerns. And I get that being something that the Bills are always going to want to check that box. But my one pushback to the idea that you can't ever take a guy with any character concern is that you build the culture, I think, to be able to bring in players like that and have them assimilate into what you do and find the best version of themselves, as Sean has kind of coined that term locally. And I just think that that was missing the mark. And it feels like at times they chase positions of need rather than go back to what I think
Brandon tried to establish early on, which is go best player available. I don't think Keon Coleman was the best player available when they picked him. I felt like they wanted a receiver in that range, and sometimes I think you can get yourself into trouble. You know, guys like Cooper DeJean, who goes off in the Super Bowl, he was sticking out on the board. Tavondre Sweat as well, and I know he went a little bit later. But I just think that that has to be one of the biggest parts of this offseason is reevaluating the draft approach. You know, when I know it, you get to that point in the offseason, it feels like your last big chance to bring in specific positions. You have to guard against that, I think.
Yeah, I like all that. You know, I mean, it's someone called up earlier. We had the same discussion, and I said maybe it's like a risk-reward type thing, right? Josh Allen was the ultimate risk, but with the highest reward. And they haven't specifically drafted like that. Maybe in the middle rounds, guys like Spencer Brown, who are just off the charts athletic for his size. But there's risk with guys like this. But, man, if you can hit on those guys with those traits, and it does feel like maybe they draft him for the higher floor, but there's not as high of a ceiling. Maybe that has to shift, Matt.
Right. And I think you bring up a great point there. You can't forget about some of the absolute home runs he's had in the middle rounds and the late rounds. I mean, Christian Benford being borderline all-pro, Brown being borderline all-pro. I mean, he has been a really above average to really good drafter, I think. Now, the elite drafters, though, I think find a way to, when they do move up for guys, make it worth their while. Like, if you could take back those two trade-ups for Dalton Kincaid and Kyer Elam, and then last year trade up for Brian Thomas Jr., which was, I think, attainable, like, that, and you can always rework it, right? Like, you'd always look back on past drafts and say, you shouldn't have done this, you shouldn't have done this. That's easy. But I think that it felt like Thomas Jr. was the last player before a significant drop-off at a position that I think they really needed, an outside separator, a guy with some long speed. If they weren't high on Xavier Worthy, which they weren't, obviously, because they traded the pick to the Chiefs to allow them to pick him, not knowing maybe who they wanted, but that could be the pick. Then you go and get a guy like Thomas Jr., who I think, by all accounts on the draft circuit, he was going to be a guy that was going to be an instant kind of success. That last player in that tier of elite receivers in this draft, and you're going to get him at a pretty good spot had you got up to the middle of the rounds. I know it's not perfect, and the other piece of this too is, like, defensively, I've been thinking a lot about this over the last couple of days as I've read a lot about Nick Sirianni, and, like, we look back a couple of months, he was on his seat was as hot as anybody's. I mean, people wanted him fired early in this season, and what they had to do was, when they went to the Super Bowl a couple years ago, they lost both their offensive and defensive coordinator. They had to kind of reshape the staff on the fly. It didn't work in the first season, so then they had to go back to the drawing board. He brings in Kellen Moore, who was a different philosophical offensive play caller than Sirianni. They had to mesh their systems together, and they did. And I think you look at the defensive side of the ball for McDermott, it's been so consistently what his vision for the defense is. I don't think they're getting rid of Bobby Babbage. But can they go out and bring in a defensive advisor from a different system, from a different philosophy, to try to come up with a better groupthink to how to play defense? Because it just seems like I think they can be better personnel-wise. They can upgrade at a lot of different positions. But philosophically, are you pushing every button to try to figure out the best way to play on both sides of the ball? It felt like they arrived at that on offense. I mean, even with all the departures, they were scoring more points than almost any team in the league. And throughout the season, they were consistently so good on offense. On the road against Kansas City, scored 29 again. I think defensively is where they have to really get in behind closed doors and think about the best ways to move forward philosophically and personnel-wise.
Yeah, this is interesting because reportedly, and we haven't had this from the Bills yet, Bruce Feldman reported last week, 5 days ago, former Jaguars and Falcons defensive coordinator Ryan Nielsen is expected to join the Bills staff as a senior defensive assistant. He spent 6 seasons with the Saints as D-line coach and co-DC. He drew high interest from multiple teams in this cycle. Okay, that's one. Then you have the report that Mike Pellegrino is joining the team from the Patriots. Now, both of these guys, Nielsen and Pellegrino, come from more heavy man-to-man systems, Matt. And I've said I think we're seeing breadcrumbs that maybe we are seeing some sort of philosophical shift afoot here.
For sure. And, you know, I've talked to a couple of Patriots media folks about Pellegrino, and he's a guy that's really started to
ascend in terms of how much players talk about their favorite coaches there. I mean, he was there for 10 years. He obviously has a connection to Belichick. But also, I think he was on Andrew Callahan's podcast, Jonathan Jones, the cornerback from the New England Patriots, and he said Pellegrino is in the building more than anybody watching tape. He is just an absolute tape fiend when it comes to figuring out tendencies, figuring out the best way to align, best way to play defense. And I think they need those types of guys. And listen, I don't want to like sit here and say that anybody that they had on the staff last year was a problem, but I do think that there has to be some accountability for the fact that there has been resources on the defensive line. And year after, and I don't know if Pellegrino is going to add to this, he's more of a defensive backs guy, but year after, Nielsen might be the guy that fits this more. Year after year, it just feels like, you know, they're spinning their wheels, whether it was with Eric Washington, the first year of Marcus West. You know, they're bringing in another assistant D-line coach, I believe, this year after...
Jason Rebrovich.
Yes. So I do like the fact that they're trying to figure out a way to better develop the guys that they have, and then schematically, I think, better align as a group. And part of this will be a big deep dive for Bobby Babbage. He probably learned a lot in year one. Maybe there's things that he wants to change. Maybe things that he wants to be a little bit different in. And those are going to be the conversations that go on over the next couple of months.
I can't remember a time covering this team recently that I have in this role I've been in so all in on the Bills taking the massive kind of swing that I'm all in on them for a guy like Myles Garrett. Now, there's no guarantees. You could offer them everything and they don't have to trade them to you. You can't snap your fingers and force it. Maybe they don't want to trade them to a team like the Buffalo Bills within their conference, whatever. But I am all about it. I just think now is the time. It does remind me somewhat of 2020, where you had to get a number one for Josh. They wanted to, they needed to, and they traded a first-round pick for Stephon Diggs, excuse me. And that's where I am. Are you all into that, or would you temper that a little bit?
I'm not all into it, although I will say, like, I'm not all in that they have to do it or the offseason is a failure. I do think that there are ways that you can massage a different plan. Because here, it's, you do that and you're going to cost yourself some really primo draft picks this year, even when the talent of this draft seems to be defensive line, where I think you want to maybe throw a couple of darts. Now, in a talent-rich position group like that, maybe you can get some real difference makers in the middle rounds. And that's where the Bills have seemingly, you know, made the most of their picks over these. Even you go back to like a Harrison Phillips in year one of Brandon Bean in his first draft. I mean, that was a really good player for them. And he's got a second contract in Minnesota, a big part of what they do defensively. So they've shown that they can scout the positions at various times. I think Rousseau has been a really good player. I know it hasn't been great in the playoffs all the time, but I think he's, to me, a 1B. And so I think if you can figure out a way to bring in the 1A, the Myles Garrett or the Max Crosby, and still position yourself over the next 2 years to give yourself six or seven chances to add to your roster, yeah, go ahead and do that. Now, if you don't do that, I think, because you got to have the other side willing, you have to, the cost has to be something that you're willing to eat. And that's the problem for me, is like getting a guy like Crosby and Garrett, who I think you make the argument that maybe the best, second best defensive players in the league, is going to cost so much. So if Bean doesn't want to go that route and give up all that draft capital, maybe go out and sign one of these free agents. I know Khalil Mack is very old. I mean, he's going to be, what is he going to be, 35? Mm-hmm. But his advanced numbers were still really good last year. If you can find a way to add 3 to 4 defensive linemen in this draft and pair them with a contract year for Greg Rousseau and Khalil Mack trying to come in here and win a Super Bowl, like his athletic profile, I think, probably, and his size, they age a little bit better than some. So I think he could still be a really big impact player. But I do agree with you. If they can find a way to get Garrett or Crosby or Hendrickson, I'm not going to bat an eye at that.
Ian Rappaport just tweeted out that the Jaguars are expected to speak with Bills Director of Player Personnel Terrence Gray in the middle of this week. There are roughly 10 or so candidates for their interview process for their GM, plus at least one potentially more internal candidate. So just so everybody's aware, obviously there's some changes that always go on in the offseason. Terrence Gray has interviewed for other jobs as well in the past, including this offseason, earlier this offseason, but now looks like he's going to be interviewing with the Jaguars for that particular position. Matt Perino joining me here on the Wester Hotline on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. Let me ask you just a couple of questions about how this roster looks next year. Do you expect Von Miller to be on the Buffalo Bills in 2025?
Oh, man, there's so much money. And listen, if the trade doesn't happen
and the free agency doesn't go the way the Bills want before the draft, then you're starting to look at, like, maybe around training camp time, preseason time, you know, pulling a deal if those some of those big fish are still out there, and you're going to need money. And that post-June 1st marker on Von Miller will be very attractive. Talking to Mike Jannetty from SpotTrack.com on the podcast last week, he seems to think that there's a world you live in where you just restructure the contract once again, bring the number down once again, turn it all into incentives. And I don't necessarily hate that idea, because I do think Von Miller provides something in, like, your defense end four or five role, somebody that's a strictly a situational pass rusher, leadership, all those kinds of things. If they want to kind of run that back, if you were asking me to guess, my guess is he's not on the roster. There's financial gain pre and post June 1st and moving on. And I do think that there might be something to, at his age and where he's at now, just getting younger at the position in general, especially if you want to take a swing on an older free agent or bring in a Garrett or Crosby. I mean, they're not young necessarily. They're still going to be going into their age 30 season. So I think the Miller experiment probably has played out and probably time to move in a different direction. But again, I know how much they like him. We heard them, you know, Brandon Bean just going on and on about what it took for him to redo his deal and everything like that. And I know that, you know, in front of a microphone is what it is. But I could see all of the potential outcomes, but I'd probably lean more towards moving in a different direction.
Speaking of in front of a microphone, that's where Sean McDermott and Brandon Bean both were a couple weeks ago, when I believe you were in the front of the room. It's tough for me to hear back there sometimes, Matt. I think it was you who asked Sean specifically if he expects Matthew Smiley to come back. And yeah, he said yes. Now, obviously, they've made a different decision and they've gone a different direction. How surprised are you after what he said 2 weeks ago and where we are now?
I'm not surprised. I was surprised 2 weeks ago when he said that he was definitively not moving on from him. I mean, this was a bad season for the special teams unit. And you can't have – and listen, they baked in all the excuses. I get all of that. And, you know, Sean would never say their excuses, but, you know, they made over the roster a little bit. They lost a lot of veteran special teams guys. I don't think they were necessarily great on special teams the year before either. There weren't as many of the big gaffes that you saw in games this year, the block punt, the allowing a fake punt, just some of the communication issues on some of the special teams plays. So I was more surprised that there was still consideration to bringing him back. I thought he should have probably been let go at the end of the season. He's close with him. I mean, he's been on his staff since 17. I mean, this is a guy. You take the Ken Dorsey situation. He joined the staff in 2020 after a couple of years. Matthew Smiley's been here since the beginning. So I think that those guys, it's tough to move off of them, but I think he had to make this decision. And I think ultimately landing on it at least puts them in a position now to try to get somebody in here with a little bit more experience that has done it at a high level to try to turn things around. In a roster like this, when you're paying the quarterback that you're paying him, you're not going to be able to have specific long-term options on special teams. Like, it's just, you're going to have to make the best with what you're given. It's going to have to be about the scheme, your ability to develop guys in that area, and I just don't think Smiley was good enough.
There are five players entering the final year of their deal who are very important pieces of this team. Greg Rousseau, James Cook, Khalil Shakir, Christian Benford, Terrell Bernard. Do you think the Bills should prioritize, or will they, and should or would, either way you want to do it, Matt, anybody early on here to say, let's get a contract extension done so we can lock up these guys? Because that's five notable names all going into last year of their deal.
Right. You know, it's interesting because I think, look, Christian Benford, I think, is ultra important in this system, right? I think projecting him to some other systems is challenging. And you've seen, like, Tre'Davious White go out and go to L.A. and go to Baltimore and really not be able to get on the field. Now, I know that there's a lot that goes into that. But I don't think that cornerbacks, defensive backs in general, leave Buffalo and tend to play as well as they did in this system. So I don't know how much of a market there will be for Benford. So I wonder if you just maybe play the Matt Milano route with that and let it get to the end and see what his value is on the open market, and then maybe come in at the 11th hour and try to figure that out. I think Rousseau, if you get that done early enough, I know or at least I think I know, that they want him to be a part of the future. He's so young still. He is a difference maker, and I think just you need to give him some more help on that defensive line. So I think that he's going to probably be a part of things. And then I think you can get Shakir and Bernard back on pretty decent contracts. The Cook one is interesting because I sit here today saying that I think he did enough this year, showed enough this year that you want him a part of things long term. The problem is this is a stacked running back class in the draft. So you could technically find somebody of potentially James Cook caliber, reset the clock on that rookie deal. You have Ray Davis for three more seasons on his rookie contract, and now you're kind of playing the financial game. It's going to be a really tough decision. I think it's going to come down to how much does he want? Does he want a short-term deal? He probably does, and he probably wants a big one. But if he wants in the Josh Jacobs realm or even close to that, I just don't know how you get there knowing what you're going to have to pay Allen and a lot of these other pieces and still want to go out and try to add new pieces on both sides of the ball.
Shifting gears, what did you think of the massive trade last week in the NBA, Doncic for AD?
Oh, I love that question. I woke up this morning. I can't stay up till 1 in the morning anymore.
Yeah.
I taped the game last night.
Yeah. First thing I did was check and see the stats because I actually tried to watch it. I couldn't get it. From home. So I'm like, oh, man. So I couldn't watch it. So I said, how did he do? And first thing I did was look at the stats.
Yeah, it was cool to watch. Like, I really like the way that they're going to be able to play, especially in the regular season. And they might make a run at the one seed because what they could do is they start with Doncic and LeBron, and then they put one on the bench, and then they just start rotating them. And really how they're built is like to run the show. Both of those guys are. So I think that they can get really creative and watch their minutes. Like what's been the big knock on Luka Doncic is like he can't stay healthy or his conditioning isn't as good as you need it to be, probably more on the conditioning end. And so I'm more surprised that the Mavericks traded him. My cousin, who coaches ball in Taiwan now, was a coaching intern with the Mavs 3 or 4 years ago. And so he would spend a whole season with Luka. And he's a huge ball guy. He played locally at Damon and Williamsville South. And he said he is without a doubt the most special basketball mind that he's ever been around. At his age, I mean, he was 21 when he was there, Luka was, and he was just shocked that the Mavericks traded him. I mean, this is a guy that's just entering his prime, if he's even there yet, especially with considering the way that he plays. And then you see Anthony Davis go over, and in his first game, man, he gets injured, which is the knock on him too. So crazy trade. I think it's going to really be good for the Lakers, though.
Yeah, and it's wild to see these kinds of guys at this stage. A guy like Luka to get traded is unbelievable. It reminded me when I was 15 and, Wayne Gretzky gets traded, and you're like, what? The best player on the planet in his sport in the prime of his career. And, of course, you see all the backlash and the fallout in Dallas, and you can understand from young people and people who are fans of the Mavericks. So I actually had a question on the radio. I'll ask you this. Last week we talked about this. Is there a trade in your life as a sports fan that really got to you? It could be a very bad emotion or a great emotion, but it's a team you root for, a player you root for, and it was just like, oh my God, I cannot believe that trade just happened, and it really got to you.
That's a great question. So when I was young, when I really started getting into the NBA, Tracy McGrady was my favorite player.
Yeah.
He played for the Raptors.
Now an owner of the Buffalo Bills, by the way.
Yes. And so, which full circle moment when that all was happening the last couple months. But so I really gravitated to the Carter McGrady Raptors. And when he got traded, he signed as a free agent, I believe, with the Magic. So it wasn't a trade. It was heartbreaking because I'd never gotten to a game in Toronto. I was very young at the time, and it was just like your heart ripped out. Like that was my favorite player. That was becoming my favorite team, and I didn't want to root for I wasn't a huge Duke fan, and I didn't like Grant Hill at the time. So that whole like the emotions. I can't think of what was the biggest Bills trade like over the years. I mean, trying to think like what
Kiko for LaShawn. That was a big one, right?
That was at the end. That was at the end of my before I started covering the team. I'm trying to think in like my younger years in like the 2000s if there was one.
No, not really. I don't think there was one there like a trade. I mean, Peerless Price.
Oh yeah, that was a good one. That was a good one.
Peerless Price. Remember
that. That was the Drew Bledsoe era, right?
Yeah, they franchise tagged him and then they traded him, right? Did they actually trade Jarris Bird? I don't know if they did. I don't think they did. I think he franchised and then he left. Jason Peters. right? That was a big one.
Yeah.
That was a big one.
Did they trade, where did they trade him to? The Eagles?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, wow. That's right.
Yeah. I can't think of a trade that really emotionally affected me. It's more been about, like, I think, free agent signings. Yeah. Was Alex Rodriguez a free agent signing for the Yankees?
No, they traded for him. Because remember, he's supposed to go to the Red Sox, and the league voided it, basically.
Right. Like, that was a pretty big moment. Like, yeah. I was really excited for that as a Yankees fan growing up, to see Jeter and Rodriguez play together. That stands out as a big-time memory.
All right, but how'd you watch the Super Bowl real quick? How'd you consume the game?
I just watched it. We went over to my dad's, who lives about 5 minutes away. I took my son over. We watched the first quarter and a half, and then got home before halftime. And then he didn't make it till the end, and then just watched the rest at home. It's funny, doing what we do for a living, I don't like to be at big parties when I'm watching football games, because there's so many things that you're tracking, right? Like, you're watching the game, you're following the social conversation, everything. I actually wrote a story the next day about what the Bills can learn from it. So, like, I was kind of, like, working, right? Like, watching the game, kind of working. So it's an interesting dynamic all these years later covering the NFL.
By the way, I don't like Duke, but I did love Grant Hill. He was fabulous.
I liked him as a person. I just had that, like, I wasn't a big Duke fan.
Yeah,
I probably was more of a North Carolina guy growing up.
Yeah.
And I also liked the Syracuse team. So I skewed away from, and I did not like J.J. Redick, because my cousin loved J.J. Redick. So so that even intensified my anti-Duke. I also didn't like Christian Laettner going back, which is crazy because he's from here. You'd think I would have liked him.
No, listen, I think Duke has, if you talk about Duke and Carolina, like, they both have these superstars that everybody kind of can gravitate to, but I think Duke has more of the hated guys, you know what I mean?
I agree. I think North Carolina has a lot of, like, more, like, vanilla, like, middle-of-the-road guys. Like, you know, I think of Antoine Jameson and, although now they have, you remember Rashad McCants?
Oh, yeah.
He's one of the weirdest, like, current, like, former player voices in media.
Oh.
I put him and Cam Newton in the same category of just saying absolutely just insane things all the time. Did you see this last Cam Newton comment about when he got drafted and everybody there in the Panthers organization were a bunch of losers?
No. What?
Yeah. So he said this on a podcast with Travis Hunter, because they were talking about potentially being the first overall pick. And he's like, yeah, when I got to Carolina, I'm paraphrasing. You get to go look the
right.
up. But he basically said, like, you're so excited, but then you get there, and it's like, that's a whole locker room full of losers. And apparently, Steve Smith got wind of it. And
oh, you don't want to piss off Steve Smith, by the way.
I know, right? And he sent some pointed tweets. But Newton said a bunch of stuff, like, since he's really taken off to the next level, that I'm just like, I don't know, dude. Like, what are you, the MVP over a Super Bowl title? Like, that comment, he's just been wild.
I got a great Steve Smith story that you're going to love after I take a break, because I got to get rid of you because I've kept you too long, and I apologize and appreciate it, buddy.
All good, buddy. Take care.
All right, hey, have a great time in Disney. Be safe. Matt Parrino right there on the West Her Hotline. We'll take a timeout. I am late to the break. I got to go. I'll come back with a great Steve Smith story. Very, very cool, actually. You do not want to make Steve Smith mad, no doubt, but, man, I love this guy. He's, like, one of my favorite all-time NFL players, and I'll tell you why when we come back. Yeah, I'm watching back. I think there was a fight that Steve Smith Sr. was in one time. Yeah, he gets, like, this Saints guy hits him after the play. Smith goes crazy on him. Like, I mean, he should. He was got hit after the play. He could be a really heated dude. And he is a tough, tough son of a gun, man. And I think, actually, somebody said he was at UFC, got knocked out. I mean, it doesn't surprise me he wants to fight, though. And what happened here? Hold on. Let me see this one. Here's another story from him. Got sent home from training camp after he punched teammate Ken Lucas at practice, leaving the cornerback holding an ice pack to his left eye. Yeah, there was this huge fight I remember one time watching training camp. Anyway, so Steve Smith Sr. Matt Parrino was just on from Syracuse.com and the Shout Podcast. By the way, I didn't give Matt a chance to promote the Shout Podcast. I'll promote it for him. Shout Podcast. Go check it out wherever you pod and watch him and go to YouTube and find it. Shout Podcast, Matt Parrino, Syracuse.com, all of that. So my apologies, Matt, for not letting you talk about that and promote it, but I'll let everybody know where they can find you and all of your work. So he just said this story about how Cam Newton was on a podcast and talked about how he got drafted into the Panthers, and he went in there and said something about they were just a bunch of losers. And then Steve Smith, I see this, he tweeted back, "I've watched and listened from afar as Cam Newton talked about the Panthers. None of us are perfect. We were 2-14 before you blessed us with your presence. The way you've talked about the Panthers lately, I'm disappointed. I wish you nothing but the very best. I'm done." And he's upset, and he should be. And that's his team. So I've always really loved his game, Steve Smith Sr., right? That's what I think what he officially goes by. And then a couple years ago, the Bills were playing the Ravens. Not this year, right? Wasn't this game. If I remember, it wasn't the Sunday night game this year. It was the one a couple years ago, right? Maybe it was this year. I'm getting these timelines mixed up. I can't remember if it was this year or the 2 years ago. I think it was actually the one 2 years ago. But anyway, Bills are playing the Ravens, and the Ravens have a really cool marching band, kind of like the Bills have with the drum line, right? Stampede. And the Ravens have a really cool marching band. And Josh, like, I'm standing there on the sidelines, and the marching band for the Ravens is in this spot where they're, like, behind the Bills, like, on the side, like, from the 20-yard line back. Where that's where they are, on the field. And I look behind me, and I go, I think the guy in the, one of the percussionists, one of the drummers, kind of looks like Steve Smith. And he played for the Ravens. Ah, whatever, you know. I didn't think much about it. All of a sudden, during the game, first quarter, they're showing on the big screen, like, fan shots, right? Showing a fan cheering for the Ravens. And they show on the screen Steve Smith Sr., and he's in the drum line, and everybody's cheering for him. I'm like, oh my God, he's like right behind me. He's a part of the Ravens marching band. Now, he's not like a full-time part of it. He doesn't do it every day, but Steve Smith Sr., this incredible wide receiver we watch play for the Panthers, the Ravens, he was that day, that night, and apparently has been before, part of the Ravens drum line and marching band.
That's such a cool little wrinkle. Like,
it's unbelievable.
It's so unexpected.
I will tell you.
You wouldn't think that. Through
broadcasting, I've gotten to know Steve a little bit over the years, met him once or twice. But you know I'm a drummer too, right? I'm like, I got to go talk to Steve Smith about this. This is amazing. I'm like, I was geeked. I was fanboying big time. Like, not only is Steve Smith Sr., this dude that I love watching him play and love his demeanor, and he's this really great receiver, he's also a drummer, and he's literally in the marching band for an NFL team that he played for, which is amazing. So I go up to the conductor, whoever, and I said, hey, do you mind if I got my credential. I'm like, you mind if I go talk to Steve? Like, yeah, no problem. So I walk over there. I'm like, oh, my God, like, this is amazing. How long? He's like, yeah, I've been playing my whole life, whatever. It's incredible.
It's a good way for him to take his anger out, too. Just bang a drum for a
little
while.
Yes, yes. But you know what the best part was? You wouldn't have known. Nobody knew until they showed him on the video board. Like, it wasn't like, there was no fanfare about it. They didn't bring him out. They didn't introduce him. Hey, as part of an all-star, you know, band today. Oh, guest starring with the band. It was not. It was literally like, just walking around, I look behind me, I'm like, oh, a guy looks like Steve Smith. Look up on the board. That is Steve Smith. He is playing the drums today for the Ravens marching band. So, yeah, very, very cool. So last night, as I was saying earlier to Matt Parrino when he joined me, I really wanted to see Luka's debut in a Lakers uniform. But unfortunately, I could not get the game on my television and cable system. So I'm like, well, I can't watch this now. Went to NBA TV. Was watching that, and they were showing the end of the Milwaukee game against Dallas. Dallas beats Milwaukee. And then they go to they were showing the end of the Golden State game, I think, and then they go to Dallas-Milwaukee. Either way, Golden State and, you know, Curry is just unbelievable, and he's still doing it. Talk about, like, Ovechkin and what he's doing. Look at what Steph Curry's doing at his age, right? He's incredible. 38 last night, and he's playing great lately. And I never got to see what Luka was able to do. But then this morning, first thing I did when I woke up was, let me go check the stats for Luka. And I think he started, actually, if I look at the box score correctly, this morning when I woke up. But he did wind up playing. I think he scored 14 points last night. So it's just super cool. This is a team that, you know, when I was younger, I was a big Lakers fan, and Showtime Lakers and Magic and Kareem and Worthy, and they were terrific. Kurt Rambis even, you know, guys like that. So, you know, and then the Kobe years kind of got reinvigorated again. But with LeBron, it's great. And I love LeBron. I'm not like, oh my God, hardcore LeBron James fan. But, you know, having him, superstar, on the team now with Luka, it's just cool to see this happening with a team that you kind of followed. And now you know that once LeBron is gone, it is going to be kind of Luka's team. And I just think this is a fascinating storyline and story in the NBA that this happened. And of course, as Matt pointed out, AD goes to Dallas and he gets hurt and he's out like a month.
Do you think this trade could mean like the end of the LeBron era in LA?
Yeah, yeah. Like, I mean, it's not, I don't know. I have not dug into like everything this offseason. I guess there's talk that could happen, but maybe another year. He's still playing pretty well, by the way.
Well, no, I'm not saying he's not playing good, but I just think that like for him, if you're thinking about it from his angle, like, hey, I can go out on top now potentially if Luka's here.
By the way, they're 9-1 their last 10.
Right, right. So that's what I'm saying is like if they can kind of go on a run here and make the playoffs and even maybe make a deep run, he can kind of go out on top in LA.
Here's the thing about that.
Somewhere else to retire.
Right. Well, that's the thing. I think he still wants to play. It would have to be going somewhere else, as you say, right? It wouldn't be like retiring, but maybe. The other part about this, the part about the trade I want to get to. So then the Lakers made another trade like a day later where they get Mark Williams to play center. Part of that trade was Dalton Connect, who I really like Dalton Connect. He's this great shooter from Tennessee. Followed him in college. Watch him. He's a scorer. Well, what happened was, you see what happened? Mark Williams failed his physical.
Right. Didn't he already play a game for them, though? Like,
I don't know. I didn't go back and see that. I'm not sure.
Because he got traded.
Really?
Maybe he didn't play a game, but he was like practicing with the team or something.
He might have been practicing. I don't think he could play.
It was a weird situation because it like was like 2 days after the deadline when they were like, actually, this trade's getting reversed. Because I in my first year of a fantasy basketball league, and I picked him up because I was like, oh, he just got traded to the Lakers. I got to go get this guy. Like, you know, why not? But then I saw the trade got reversed, and it's like, oh, okay.
No, he was inactive. He was inactive for the Lakers.
Maybe he was practicing with the team then, because I saw there was like, but he's already doing stuff with the team. Like, why are they reversing the trade?
So they reversed the trade, but then I was bummed they traded away Dalton Connect. But now he's back on the team. Right, but here's the deal. I keep thinking, like, what is it like for that dude? Yeah, he's coming back. Like, yeah, we just traded you, though. Right?
Ooh.
So he was...
We don't see that often.
He was inactive last night for personal reasons. But that's got to be a tough conversation.
Yeah.
Dude, you guys don't even want me here.
I mean, his personal reasons are probably I'm moving all my things back.
Right, I know, like, right? I know.
But I don't think you really don't see that often.
No.
But there was also one, PJ Tucker, I think it was. He got traded by three different teams in a 36-hour span. He got traded from, I know it was between San Antonio and Toronto for one of them. But then there was another team that traded for him from Toronto, and then that team traded him too. Like, it was like boom, boom, boom. He's getting traded three times in 36 hours. And it's like,
that happens sometimes that with these guys at the deadline. Instead of a three-team deal, it kind of happens in succession. By the way, the NHL trade deadline is when? March 7th, I believe. Is that what it is?
March 7th.
March 7th. I mean, there's nothing the Sabres are going to do right now to necessarily help them make the playoffs, but are they going to be sellers then, and just Jason Zucker, Jordan Greenway? I mean, they have guys. I mean, are they going to fetch you anything? Probably not. I mean, Zucker could. But Zucker these are guys I'd like to still have on the team, maybe. I don't even know. It's just such a tough spot to be in. And they've been in it for too long. We'll come back after this timeout. We'll take a timeout here on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. I'm getting excited. In 10 minutes from now, we're going to go try all this soup. It's the Soup Herbal here at Odyssey. And people brought in soup. I'm going to be trying that in about 10 minutes. But we still got one more segment for you along the way here. 803-0550 on the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. All right, well, it's official. We all kind of anticipated it. Been reported for weeks. And you knew when they didn't make a hire for a couple weeks and waited that the Saints were going to bring on Kellen Moore as their new head coach. He is now the new head coach of the New Orleans Saints. So that means every head coach vacancy has been filled this offseason. 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 of them. Here's what we're going to do. Here they are. I'll just give it in the order of what I have here. Patriots, Mike Vrabel. Bears, Ben Johnson. Jets, Aaron Glenn. Jaguars, Liam Cohen. Raiders, Pete Carroll. Cowboys, Brian Schottenheimer. And now Saints, Kellen Moore. So tomorrow what we'll do, how about this? Ready? We'll have a little fun tomorrow. Tomorrow I will rank 1 through 7 who did the best job here and who did the worst job. Doesn't mean they're going to be the most successful. You could have what I consider like, oh, that's a great hire for you. That's what you needed to do. Doesn't mean it's going to work out. There are so many things that are not in the control of the head coach in a lot of these situations. Sometimes you have a meddling owner. Sometimes you don't have the support from the GM, and there's a power struggle and all that. But Vrabel, Johnson, Glenn, Cohen, Carroll, Schottenheimer, and more. Tomorrow, I will rank 1 through 7 who did the best job this offseason hiring their next head coach. Sabres Live up next. Four Nations Faceoff starts tomorrow. They'll have more on that. One Bills Live after that. Show up with the Bulldog at 3 o'clock. Enjoy the rest of your Tuesday here on WGR.